welcome. You're listening to The Scoreboard here on WSIC. Studio 4, that's the phone number. Get in here, talk sports on the last day of the week. We got a lot coming up this weekend. Oh boy. The Carolina Panthers made some news today. The Carolina Hurricanes were in action last night. Did not fare too well in their game against Boston. I'll let you know why that's significant. We got March Madness tonight. Yes, March Madness, the NCAA women's tournament continuing. We got NC State taking on South Carolina. You got Iowa taking on UConn. And then the finals will be on Sunday as well. Also, NASCAR Cup Series racing on Friday. Well, actually, Friday is the trucks. Sunday will be the Cup Series race. And just in case you weren't already aware, you will be able to watch that right here on WSIC. Well, listen to it by MRN, who's covering it this week. The Motor Racing Network. 844 Studio 4, get you right here on the program. Anything you want to talk about. We're going to resume the high school sports schedule next week. Starting on Monday, we'll get you caught back up, re-energized for the high school season as everybody's on spring break. So they kind of paused everything, which makes sense. You know, I don't want to force anybody to play sports when you should be on spring break. It doesn't make sense to me. So we have other things we can talk about in the meantime, though. So we're going to get into that. Starting with what happened last night. The Carolina Hurricanes. Yes, we are getting heavy into hockey because we have the Hurricanes as one of the best teams in the NHL this year. When you look at the standings, they're right up there. I've been telling you how close the top of the NHL is towards the end of this season. I have never seen so many teams over 100 points this close in the standings. Here's how it breaks down right now. And look, the season ends soon. Most of these teams only have 5, 6, some less. That's how many games are left in the season. Playoffs are around the corner. They're starting soon. Right now, there are 7 teams in the NHL that are over 100 points. That is the most I've seen. Right now, the New York Rangers lead that list, followed by the Dallas Stars and Boston Bruins, 1 point behind. Now, that's significant because Boston played the Carolina Hurricanes last night. And I've been telling you how important these games are for the Hurricanes. You want home ice advantage. And I fully expect Carolina to beat whoever their round one matchup is going to be against. Right now, if the season were to end right now, they would be playing the Philadelphia Flyers. The New York Rangers would be taking on the New York Islanders. Both of the teams that are higher in the standings, being the Rangers and the Hurricanes, I would expect to win those games. Meaning in round two, those teams would meet. Last time the New York Rangers and the Carolina Hurricanes met in the playoffs, it went 7 games. The time before that, I believe it was actually in the bubble as the like play-in tournament. Thank goodness that the NHL didn't keep the play-in tournament. And that one wasn't close. But before that, I don't think they met in 2019. So last time they met in the playoffs, it went 7 games, and Game 7 was here in the Carolinas. The way it went then was a game that was dropped by Carolina. New York won here. I believe it was a 5-1 final score. So while home ice is important, it's not everything. But if Carolina can't keep winning to end the year, and look, 6 games left for the Hurricanes and for the Rangers. Right now, the Rangers are at 106, the Hurricanes at 101, 5 points behind. And you know how the seasons work and the scheduling and and the standings and how many points you get. If you win, you get 2 points. If you go to overtime, no matter what happens, no matter if you lose in overtime, win in overtime, or lose in a shootout, if you get to overtime and don't win, you get 1 point. If you lose in regulation, you get none. Well, Carolina against the Bruins last night, 4-1 final score. The Hurricanes blow past Carolina. And this game, it was over before it really even started. 3 goals in 10 minutes to start the game against Freddie Anderson. And I told you, I don't know if he's going to be able to get in tune here in time for the playoffs. And while there's still time left, yes, it is not a good sight to see your starting goaltender give up 3 goals in the first 10 minutes. And I get it. It's still the regular season. Let's not hit the panic button. But if there is a question mark during the playoffs, we are all going to look back at the trade deadline this year and say, why would you go after two of the top players in the league when you have a good team? Skater-wise, the hole in the team is in goaltender. Why didn't you address that? But we're not there yet, so let's not panic. Let's look forward and see what the Carolina Hurricanes have coming up next. And for the Hurricanes, well, their schedule is not that bad for the remainder of the season. They have the Capitals tonight. That's going to be a 7 o'clock puck drop. They got Columbus, and they do have a rematch against Boston. And then they play 3 non-playoff teams to end the season: St. Louis, Chicago, and Columbus. Now, I don't think that Carolina has enough time or has the outlook on the season or the scheduling, actually. Like, they still got to play Boston. Washington's a hot team right now. I know that they have that crazy points differential where, yeah, they're a point out of the playoffs, but they're a minus 38 points differential team. So I don't know if Carolina's going to just blow past them. Plus, they got to play Boston again. Other than that, it's not that bad. But for the Rangers, their schedule is just a little bit more tolerating, I would say, as they have to play the Red Wings, the Canadiens, the Islanders, the Flyers, the Islanders again, and the Senators. Now, while two of those teams are fighting for the playoffs, I don't expect them to be big factors in the playoffs. They're teams that are ahead of the schedule. They kind of outperformed what they were expecting this year. So just getting to the playoffs is going to be seen as a plus. But it is hockey, and we've seen crazy things happen. In 2014, the number 8 seed in the West, the LA Kings, won the Stanley Cup because they got hot at the right time. So anything can happen. But with just over a week left in the season, Carolina's got to get hot, and they got to do it soon. Coming up on our first commercial break of the day, don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Scoreboard. We're back after this.
More of sports director Joe Berg's The Scoreboard is coming up on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Talk sports with Joe Berg. Call 844-STUDIO-4. It's The Scoreboard on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Everyone, welcome back to The Scoreboard, segment 2 here on this Friday. Just got done talking about the NHL. Carolina Hurricanes in action tonight after losing last night. Tough game. Over before it really started. And I was just looking into this. I've been looking into this for a while, and I need to put a call out there for anybody who might know anything, because I can't seem to find it. I want to know what the most amount of teams to have 100-point season is in the NHL. So I just told you, team-wise, I'm not talking about players having 100 points, goals, and assists. I'm talking about how the New York Rangers have 51 wins, 4 ties. That translates into 106 points in the season. I want to know the most teams to be over 100 points in one season, because we have a chance to have 10 teams have over 100 points in the standings. That's, I can't even fathom that. 100 points in a season is like, that's how you know you had a really good season. Usually, at least that's what it's been in the past. Maybe I missed something. I don't know. The Toronto Maple Leafs are 10th right now in the NHL standings. And they have 95 points in 75 games played. That means they still have 7 games left to play, and all they need is 5 points to break 100. And they're the farthest away. The craziest one here is the Edmonton Oilers. After the terrible start that they had to the season, and then they had that 14-game winning streak in the middle of the season, they're going to break 100 points this year. It's going to happen. I didn't see that coming. I thought after the start of that season, they were going to miss the playoffs, and there were going to be big changes. Well, we're going to move on from the NHL now. I just wanted to put that call out there. If anybody knows the answer to that question, let me know. We have sports on tonight and quite a bit going on. We have to talk about the NCAA Women's Tournament because 2 big games going on tonight. Now, I've told you all week long that this is the first time in NCAA tournament history that two schools have their men's and women's team each in the Final Four. That would be NC State, who's the 3 seed in the women's tournament, but in the men's tournament, they are the Cinderella this year. They are the chosen ones. They're at 11. And then you have UConn. Dominant program. Men's and women's basketball there has always been dominant. 3 seed in the women's tournament, 1 seed in the men's tournament. Man, I've never seen a 30-0 run in basketball before. I'm just going to throw that out there. I've been keeping up with basketball for quite a while. A 30-0 run is wild. You scored 30 points before your opponent did anything. Imagine that was to start the game. I know I don't mean to bring up stuff that happened last weekend, but imagine UConn started the game on a 30-0 run. Oh my goodness. So the women's tournament continues tonight. 7:00, you got NC State versus South Carolina. And then the probably the game that everybody's waiting for, UConn versus Iowa, Caitlin Clark, Paige Buchers. They actually met in 2021 in the Sweet 16. UConn, Paige Buchers getting the best of that matchup. But both of them were pretty young, and that was also played in with not many fans, as I should put it, I guess. Not many fans were in attendance for that one. And I'll tell you what, women's basketball, I've been saying it all week as the games get bigger and bigger. Now, Shaquille O'Neal was actually on someone's podcast with... Oh, I'm going to mess up his name, so I'm not going to say it. He was on a podcast, and he says that he has paid more attention to the women's tournament this year than the men's tournament, and there are more storylines and better storylines in the women's tournament than the men's. He is a guy who loves basketball, and he's out there telling you that the women's tournament is the one to watch this year. You don't need me to do that for you anymore. Take it from the people who know what they're talking about. So 7:00, NC State, South Carolina. That will be the Final Four from the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in Cleveland, Ohio. Did they measure the three-point lines? That's all I'm curious about. Because if they didn't measure the three-point line, I'm going to be a little upset. I still can't believe that they went through multiple games before they realized that the three-point line was not correct. What are you going to do? The NCAA will always embarrass itself, I guess. That's the moral of that story. 844-STUDIO-4, that's 844-788-3464. It gets you into the studio part of the show. There's a couple of things in the news today that I want to get to, starting with the Carolina Panthers. They are in the news again. No, they are not relocating, I promise. If you listened on Monday, you understand what I'm talking about. They signed their defensive tackle, Derek Brown, to a $96 million extension. That was well-deserved. It is 4 years, averaging $24 million a year. It's the fourth highest in the NFL for a defensive tackle. Chris Jones, Christian Wilkins, and Justin Matabuke are the only ones who are being paid more, and all of those defensive tackles sign new contracts during this offseason. Derek Brown set a Panthers franchise record for tackles by a lineman last year with 67, and he thrived in that new 3-4 defense under Coach Avera there. So we'll see what happens next year with the Panthers, but that is a big piece that they're going to get to keep on their roster this year. Derek Brown is a dominant interior player, and you hear a lot of people say it, but not a lot of teams do it. The game is won on the interior offensive and defensive lines. We've seen that for quite some time now. Look at Chris Jones. He won a Super Bowl almost single-handedly. Look at the now retired Hall of Fame first ballot for sure, Aaron Donald. Look at him against the Bengals when Joe Burrow had his receiver wide open down the sideline. Ramsey fell down. Jalen Ramsey, the defensive back for the Rams, he fell down. And Burrow got sacked. So he wasn't able to complete that pass. And it's kind of what won the Super Bowl for the Rams. In the moment, at least. Because Joe Burrow would have thrown a game-winning touchdown. And history would be quite different now. Anyway, that's what the Panthers did this year. Today, actually, earlier today. By the way, did anybody see the news that there was a earthquake earlier today in the Northeast, in New Jersey, actually, and it was felt all the way in New York. There is a video from Yankee Stadium. The Yankees had their home opener today. There is a camera filming what's going on. It's a stationary camera attached to something on the stadium, and it's shaking a little bit, and BP is going on like normal. Well, apparently they were able to feel it, and they just said, yeah, they thought it was the sound system. They had no idea. So they just kept doing batting practice. There's an earthquake happening, and they're like, yeah, you know, that's fine. You know, it's nothing like a World Series earthquake. Ha ha ha. But I'd find that funny. And Aaron Boone, who was from USC, University of Southern California, just so you know, USC. He's kind of like used to earthquakes. He didn't even realize that it was an earthquake because it was so small, you know, for the East Coast. Any earthquake is, I guess, a decent sized one. But he didn't realize it. So they were like, eh, whatever. They thought it was the sound system shaking the stadium. Says a lot about the sound system over there, I guess. Also in the news, Bronny James. We're going to have to get into this one after the break because I have a lot to say about this. And you're probably not going to expect what I have to say about it, but you're going to have to stay tuned because this is an interesting story revolving Bronny James and USC, University of Southern California. All right, we're going to take that break now as we're coming up on the halfway mark of the program on this Friday. Happy Friday to everyone. Hope you're having a great day. We're going to talk about this Bronny James story. Then we're going to move on. We're going to cover NASCAR after that because we have Martinsville, the paperclip. Sunday, the Cup Series is there. And later tonight, the trucks will be in action. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned right here on the scoreboard. 844-STUDIO-4. Dial that number. Get you on the program. We'll chat about anything you want to talk about. We'll be back right after this.
Keep it right here. We'll have more of the scoreboard with Joe Berg in just a moment from 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Now more of the scoreboard with Joe Berg on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Listening to the scoreboard. 844-STUDIO-4. That's the phone number. Talked about the Panthers re-signing Derek Brown. Big move. That's a good move. Finally! Something positive we can talk about with the Panthers. I know it's been a while. 844-STUDIO-4. That's 844-788-3464. Get you here on the program. Anything you want to talk about, we're here for you. All right. I told you a little bit about a story with Bronny James out of USC. Here's the headline for you. USC's Bronny James declares for NBA draft. Also enters the draft, the transfer portal. Huh? So here's the quote. Bronny posting this to his Instagram account looks like a couple of hours ago today. I've had a year with some ups and downs, but it all added to growth for me as a man, student, and athlete. I've made the decision to enter the NBA draft while maintaining my college eligibility and will also be entering the NCAA transfer portal. Thank you to USC for an amazing freshman year. And as always, thankful for my family, friends, doctors, athletic trainers, fans for their support. Here's the stats for you. The Bronny James stat line for the 2023-2024 college year. 19 minutes a game. 4.8 points. 2.8 rebounds, and 2.1 assists per game. Huh? What? You declared for the draft? No, I get it. It's strategic. Everything is strategic with this. You're not a top pick, which means you have a chance to go to a team that actually wants you and sees your potential. Now, if the fit is right, maybe you do go to the NBA. You're not going to make an impact anytime soon. It's going to take you a few years to get your feet under yourself. But in the meantime, like, let's say, oh, I don't know, if the Lakers were interested in Bronny James, maybe he stays in the draft, nobody else takes him, and second round pick, the Lakers say, you know what? We're going to take Bronny James. I wouldn't be surprised. Now, if you have a team with a bad organization behind them, like Detroit, Orlando hasn't had much success recently. Charlotte, hate to throw them out there. I'm not talking about somebody like San Antonio, who's still getting their feet under them with their new star player in Victor Wembanyama and a coach in Greg Popovich, who has been there, done that. that's a good organization. They're just in the middle of a change, in a transition process. But for Bronny James, this isn't about becoming the number one overall pick. This isn't about being the number three overall pick, because the endorsements are going to be there. Your NBA contract is kind of going to be secondary here. At least that's the way I see it. You have LeBron James as your father, and I hate to tell you, but it's going to give you an advantage. You're going to get more eyes on you. You're going to get more endorsements. You know, you're going to get sponsored by Nike, and you're going to be on commercials. But with that is going to come increased scrutiny. People are going to have a close eye on Bronny James if he's in the NBA. I wouldn't expect him to play much in the first year. He'll play, but he won't be a starter. He can't. He averaged 5 points this year in 19 minutes a game. How many times did you hear his name in the national media? Not many. It's not his turn yet. I really just think that this is more for him to get acquainted with the process, get familiar with some teams, some people, show off some skill, see who might be interested this year, and then I fully expect him to go back to college, probably for a different program, but I don't think Bronny's going to the NBA this year. I don't see that being a good move. And I don't think this is a bluff either, in the fact where everybody knows he's not going to go to the NBA. I think there is a chance he goes to the NBA, especially if that team that I used as an example, the Lakers, decide, hey, let's take a flyer on Bronny James, LeBron's son. You know, the dynamic will be good there. LeBron will get his wish of playing with his son. It gets to happen here in LA. But I don't think that's going to happen this year. Probably next year. But he could have a good season next year in college and bump his draft stock to the point where, yeah, he's going to be a lottery pick. So this is a really strategic play here. And you know LeBron, if you've been paying attention to the NBA, he's a businessman as well. He is the greatest basketball player of all time, and he's a good businessman. He's going to own a franchise in Vegas one day. It's all strategy. So I wouldn't look too much into this, but you know, something to keep an eye on. Speaking of college, I saw a report of a possible college football super league that is being discussed to replace the NCAA and college football playoff. So there's a group that includes several college presidents that has proposed to dramatically alter the way college football is organized, according to The Athletic's Andrew Marchand and Stuart Mandel. The group, which is called College Sports Tomorrow, has floated the idea of creating a two-tiered structure among FBS schools. Where have you heard that before? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Right here on the scoreboard, probably. The current CST, College Sports Tomorrow, outline would create a system that would have the top 70 programs, all members of the five former major conferences, plus Notre Dame and new ACC member SMU, as permanent members and encompass all 130 FBS universities. The members would be in seven 10-team divisions, joined by an eighth division of teams that would be promoted from the second tier. This sounds like relegation and promotion to me. Where'd you hear that one first? Yeah, you probably heard it here on the scoreboard, because I've been telling you, we're going to get to something like that. Now, I didn't expect 70 teams. I threw out 40. Because, yeah, you have your Power Five conferences, but let's create a little bit of parity, a little bit of excitement. Wouldn't it be crazy if one year Alabama had a bad year and they got relegated? They can't play for a national championship next year. But I understand. Money trumps all, so you got to keep the teams that are going to bring in the big bucks. Fine. Do that. Now, this is all just kind of rumors at this point. It's going to happen. I need you to prepare yourself. It's probably a few years down the road. It's a good thing that the NCAA pretty much has a stranglehold on March Madness, because if they didn't, the NCAA would be in trouble. They'd be like, hey, we're going to no longer exist because we don't have anything. But the men's and women's basketball tournament is still run by the NCAA, and it's one of the best tournaments of the year. One more segment here on the scoreboard. We're going to get to our NASCAR preview after this. Don't go anywhere. 844-STUDIO-4. Dial me up and we can chat. Back after this.
More of Sports Director Joe Berg's The Scoreboard is coming up on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. It's The Scoreboard with your host, Sports Director Joe Berg, on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
All right, everyone, welcome back. You're listening to The Scoreboard here on WSIC. 844-STUDIO-4, that is the phone number. Get you right here, part of the program, part of The Scoreboard. Anything you want to talk about, doesn't matter to me. I might be talking about one thing. You could ask me anything you want to talk about. It's up to you. 844-STUDIO-4. All right, let's talk about NASCAR as the Cup Series heads to Martinsville, the Paperclip, this Sunday, 3 o'clock. You can listen to that race right here on WSIC. The race will be presented by MRN. That's the Motor Racing Network. Coverage beginning 2 o'clock. We're not going to talk about restarts. We're not going to do it. Did you see Denny Hamlin and Marcus Smith going at it on Twitter? Did you see what happened there? Man, whew, that was good. Okay, so here's what happened. Pictures surfaced of Sonoma Raceway, which was undergoing a repave. They were fixing it up a little bit and, you know, putting some fresh pavement down there. When Denny Hamlin quote tweeted it and said, this is what happens when you skimp on supplies and try to do things cheap, basically. Marcus Smith said, hey, don't talk about this if you don't know what you're talking about. And then Denny Hamlin said, you don't need to delete this comment. We've seen your reconfiguration record. That includes quite a few tracks that are now destroyed. Kentucky, Bristol, they had to throw dirt on it. Texas. And then here's the full exchange. Marcus Smith then said, yes, we take risks. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. We've seen your attempt of the championship as well. When you have a chance, maybe you could give me some golf tips. What is Marcus Smith doing on Twitter like that? What? Why? What is the point of this? You cheaped out on a repave and the track is breaking down. You see how many tracks you've destroyed? Texas lost a date because nobody wants to go to Texas anymore. Remember when they had the All-Star race there? It was terrible. There were no passes. I just find that funny. I find that really funny. Anyway, the Cup Series heading to Martinsville this weekend. That's concrete. So no asphalt. Well, it's both, actually. Straightaways are asphalt. Corners are concrete. It's an interesting track. Very good track. And last year, we had a couple of pretty good races there. The first one won by Kyle Larson. The final one won by Ryan Blaney, and that is the race that he clutched that win to go to the Final Four at Phoenix and ended up winning himself a championship over that. I expect another good race. You know, Martinsville always produces good racing. Mostly because you can't go anywhere there. It's bumper to bumper. There's always action on the track. I still, out of all the short tracks, Bristol is still my favorite. And even if we don't have the tire issue that we have, that we had there in the spring, in the fall, it's still always going to be my favorite short track. But Martinsville is a close second. I've been to quite a few Martinsville races of my own. I can't even tell you who's won any of those. I really can't. I've been to a lot of them. It's a good track. You can see everything. That's one of those tracks where I tell people, like, go to your first race there. Because you'll see everything. It'll be intense. There's going to be action. Don't go to, like, the Charlotte Roval for your first race. That's a bad idea. That's not NASCAR. I mean, it is, but it isn't. You know what I mean. So like I said, Kyle Larson won the first race there. That was the 400 lap race. I wish they were both still 500 laps, because 400 laps is just kind of, there's a lot that can play out in the final 100 laps of a Martinsville race. But that's the way it goes now. I'm not going to complain. At least they didn't throw dirt over top of it. So Kyle Larson won the first race there last year. Here's what he has to say on if he feels like he's figured out that track now that he's won there.
I do not feel like I have it figured out, but I feel like since I've been at Hendrick Motorsports and got to work with Cliff and our engineers, you know, they've really helped me kind of figure out how to get around there a little more normally, and also I think working with my driving style a little bit. So, yeah, since I've been at Hendrick, I feel like I'm a top 10 guy there. You know, I'm not, definitely not the best, you know, but it was amazing to win a race there. I honestly never thought that I would win a race there. So to have a grandfather clock in my collection is great, and I'm happy with one, but I would love more now. So yeah, that one's probably one of the most special wins, just because that place for so long has been so tough on me.
I do expect Larson to be a factor this weekend, mostly because, like you said, he's gotten better there. He won a race last year, and then he went back there in the fall and couldn't stay on the lead lap. That's what happens sometimes. But I do expect Larson to be a factor this weekend. So here is how the schedule breaks down for Martinsville. We actually currently on track are the Xfinity Series cars. Qualifying is going on for Saturday's race. We're just starting that, so not really any news as to who is leading that qualifying session. What I can tell you, I guess, if you want to know, is Carson Quapple is marked as the number one driver right now. So not many people out there on the track just yet. Like I said, qualifying just began. So tonight, we have the Long John Silver's 200 at 7:30. That is the truck series, 200 laps around Martinsville. Saturday, we will have Cup qualifying at 5:20, and then the Dude Wipes 250, that's the Xfinity series, at 7:30. And then on Sunday, the Cookout 400, 3 o'clock, and like I said, you can listen to that right here on WSIC, coverage beginning at 2 o'clock. Let's hear from last week's race winner, Denny Hamlin, on the importance of winning the pole at Martinsville.
Yeah, it's big at Martinsville for sure. It's not as big as Phoenix, but it's, you know, it's close in that vicinity. I don't know how many pole winners have started, you know, have finished in first. It's, I don't know the numbers exactly, but certainly it's an advantage, especially if you have a good pit crew that, you know, is just very solid, not going to make mistakes. You know, you're most likely going to gain a spot or two each time you go in the pit area. So it's certainly an advantage.
And that's probably the biggest advantage with qualifying well at Martinsville is you get to pick your pit stall, and you're going to pick the number one stall because it's the shortest distance to the line where they determine the starting order during like a caution period. And Martinsville is such a compact track that the pits are compact. So if you're pit stall is first, you just have to get to your stall cleanly, and then you don't really have to worry anymore because it's a straight shot out of the pits. Everybody else that's mid-pack or has a pit stall that's all the way at the back, they're going to have to get through people entering their stall or, while others are leaving, and if you're on the pole, you're more than likely going to stay up front. So you don't really have to worry about because you're already going to be right at the exit. And I talked about the other important thing about qualifying well at Martinsville being that, well, and this one should be pretty obvious. The track is so small that if you're in the back half of the field, you're dangerously close to going a lap down 10 laps into the race. So who do I think is going to win Martinsville this weekend? I think Martin Truex Jr. is going to redeem himself. He's going to get his first win of the year. That is my official prediction. I don't think I gave a winner for... Oh, no, I did. I said it would be Kyle Busch. I'm staying away from Kyle. He's having a bad year. So the women's tournament tonight kicking off, and then you also have the Carolina Hurricanes in action. Big game for them tonight. The Rangers are playing as well, so if the Rangers lost, Carolina win, they can close that gap to the standings quite a bit more. And man, it's going to be quite the race to the finish there. All right, while we have a second here on the scoreboard, we're going to go through this day in sports history. Couple of things for you, starting with number one. In 1984, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar breaks Wilt Chamberlain's all-time scoring record. That was on this day in 1984. Also on this day, back in 67, the man we just talked about having his record broken, Wilt Chamberlain, he grabbed an NBA record 41 rebounds. Whew! That was in 67. Thanks everyone for tuning in today. Have a good weekend. Watch plenty of sports, the women's tournament, golf, I guess, if you want. We got the Masters next week. That'll be fun. I'll talk to you guys next week. See ya.
Serving you better than ever before. 105.9 100.7 WSIC, Statesville, Mooresville, North Charlotte.